It's time! Hey, Dave, listen up, please!
Scotty, that's a great question. I got a question for you, though, Scotty. You know that there's other players on our team besides Desi.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know. Something amazing.
Jones for three. And he banks it in.
Bailey. Up and in and a chance for three.
Welcome into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. Arkansas starting to open up a little bit, Scotty, but we are still 6 feet apart because we are doing our part. Scotty Bordelon joined alongside Seth Campbell here, and we've got a chock-full basketball podcast of Mid-America. You think once we're hitting May and getting into the latter parts of May that there wouldn't be any college basketball news, but that's wrong. We've got NBA draft withdrawal date getting moved back, which affects an Arkansas Razorback. We've got Musselman talking about he's in favor of some rule changes, Big 12 SEC Challenge news, and then Scotty's got an interesting story on before they were coaches, an entire series that he's done, talked about Van Horn.
That's been a pretty fun series to do so far. I've talked to Mike Neighbors, Todd Schaefer, who's the associate head coach for women's basketball, and then Matt. Talked to Dave Van Horn and Matt Hobbs for me for that story. I thought that one turned out. It was really interesting. If you haven't read it, it involves Dave Van Horn hitchhiking when he was like 13, 14 years old to get to work.
Nice.
Which was pretty interesting. And then talked to Eric Musselman earlier this week for a series that Matt and I are doing next week that we'll talk about maybe a little bit later. And then I just asked him what his first few jobs were, and he's got some pretty cool stories too.
So make sure to check that out, Eric Musselman, before they were coaches. And then Connor Vanover, we teased it last week. He's got a story coming out soon as well. All right, before we get into any of it, Scotty, episode 7 and 8 of The Last Dance, what did you think?
Thought it was pretty good. Like, this series has been really good. Some of it is not, like, touching on new
right
subjects. Like, it's just kind of going back over things that a lot of people know, but it's doing a pretty good job of also throwing in some stories that maybe weren't told or that are very well known. One of the things that jumped out to me was when Michael Jordan was filming Space Jam, like, he would film all day long.
Yes.
And then he would take breaks. Like, he would take a 2-hour break and he would go to this the Jordan Dome
that
Warner Brothers built for him, and then he would go back to filming. And then when filming was done, he had like the who's who of the NBA at the time come over there and play pickup games.
Yeah,
that's insane.
Just fly down to Warner Brothers studio real quick, go to the Jordan Dome. You know, that around the NBA, that had to be an invitation. Like, you're talking to some other guys like, hey, did you get invited to go to Jordan? No.
Yeah.
Well, I did, so I'm going to go down there.
That's a big deal.
And play with Jordan.
Sure.
It's like a golden ticket, basically,
yeah,
to go play with Jordan. And that's how they were going to get him into game shape. And I thought the story about Jordan just making stuff up to motivate him. It was the game where they're playing back-to-backs against, oh my goodness, the team escapes me. I can't remember if it was the Bullets. The Washington Bullets. And they had the guy, I can't remember, but he went off. And then he's walking off the court, and Jordan says that he tells him, hey, good game, Jordan. And Jordan's like, he's talking about this his entire time. It's just motivating him. He goes out there, and Jordan says before the game, I'm going to score as many points as that kid did in the game in the first half. And he does.
And he did it.
Yeah, he does. And then afterwards, they find out that that never happened. That interaction between the guy on the Bullets and Michael Jordan never happened.
Manufactured adversity.
He just made it up to motivate himself. Crazy. Crazy Michael Jordan.
Yeah, the dude's a sociopath.
That's
part of what made him so great.
I think you have to have some of that in order to be the greatest at something and just motivate. And I liked how his teammates basically said, let's make no doubt about it. You know, he's a jerk.
And, yeah.
In other words, they said that.
Right.
But is he the greatest basketball player of all time? You know, in their opinion, they said yes. So I think that it's just fascinating information all the way around. And the fact that Jordan's just such a premier athlete, too, that they put him in AA baseball, which is about the equivalent. I've heard a lot of people say it's about the equivalent of SEC baseball. So imagine a guy that hadn't picked up a bat since high school going out and playing in the SEC, something that we're very familiar with. The guys are throwing 90, 91 up there and hitting over 200.
Yeah, it's crazy. And you know the reason that they just put him at AA?
Yeah.
Is because the lower levels, like, just wasn't set up for all that media attention.
Which,
like, all of the media that was going to show up. Like, he was doing press conferences. I think they showed a clip of him doing a press conference, sitting in a chair on top of the dugout, and, like, basically two sections of that minor league ballpark are just filled with reporters and cameras.
Yeah, I noticed that, too. Do you know the story? Never mind. They mentioned it. The owner of the Bulls owned the White Sox. That's why they gave him – that's why he went with the White Sox. Never mind. I remember that now. Okay. Well, I'm super excited for episodes 9 and 10 and the wrap-up of The Last Dance. Also kind of bummed because I don't know what I'm going to do on my Sunday nights now.
You can watch American Idol, but the finale might be coming up.
Oh, that's
it's been weird. It's been kind of funny at our place. Like, obviously, I want to watch The Last Dance, but I want to watch American Idol too because Mallory and I have been super invested in this season.
Oh,
and
no.
It's getting down to the top seven right now. And I mean, they're obviously doing all of these performances remote from, you know, from their house. And it's been pretty interesting. Like, I think I've got my winner right now.
Okay.
I think I'm actually down to like my top two, but after, you know, American Idol's 2 hours long. So it runs from 7 to 9. And so at 9 o'clock, I'm starting the first episode of The Last Dance. And so I'm finishing it like 11 o'clock or midnight or whenever. So that's the night I have to send the budget to. So that's Sunday's a late night for me.
Sunday staying up late to get in all of your, I guess, duties and not necessarily duties.
Yeah, I gotta get my shows in too.
Yeah, there you go. All right, Scotty, moving on to Arkansas basketball. There is a big date that has been moved. The NBA withdrawal date to withdraw your name from the NBA draft has moved back, which will affect Isaiah Joe. The NCAA pushed it back. Well, I mean, honestly, what does this mean for Eric Musselman and the Razorbacks and for Isaiah Joe?
Yes, it's interesting. Like, this came down at like 6 o'clock on Wednesday, and previously the underclassmen had until June 3rd to withdraw their name from the draft and, you know, retain their college eligibility. Now that date has been pushed back and it's TBA. And we just don't know when that date is going to be. The new withdrawal date is going to be made public once the NBA has developed a timeline for the pre-draft process. That's according to the senior vice president of basketball, Dan Gavitt. I mean, it's just more wait and see at this point.
I'm getting tired of saying, but it's exactly right.
Yeah, you just kind of got to wait and see. I mean, I don't think as much as people rightfully harp on the NCAA, like I think they're doing the right thing. Like, just they're keeping the players' best interests in mind too, and so they don't make like a rash, too quick decision on this. So I think that was, you know, pretty smart.
Yeah, I think that we knew that June 3rd date really wasn't going to stick, especially if the NBA wasn't back.
Right. And they've also, I think the NBA announced that it was postponing the draft lottery and the combine, which was scheduled later this month. I think it was inevitable once that was postponed that, you know, the withdrawal date was going to get pushed back.
NBA seems to be the only one, though, that is kind of pushing their... that is pushing their date back. The NFL went ahead and went with theirs. Now, you got to think that the NFL had an entire season to scout. And, I mean, Arkansas even had a pro day before.
Yeah, and I mean, they still had the combine, too.
And, yes, and they still had the combine to look at athletes. You got to think that, you know, NBA, they haven't had all that. And now the MLB is moving on as well. They significantly cut down their draft. Can you imagine being a GM on a baseball team? You're like, all right, I got to draft 40. Sometimes, you know, depending on if you get a compensation pick, you can draft 42, 45. And, you know,
tons of guys.
You got to draft all these guys, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, now we're going to go from 40 to 5. And you're kind of like, well, okay, good. I don't have to, I guess, you know, number 35 on my list was not going to make it anyway. But also at the same time, you're going, well, I got to get these 5 right. But the draft sheet, he's going to be done in one night and go, the MLB draft guy is going to be done in one night and go, wow, this is nice.
Right. I think the thing you should do is just draft Heston Kerstad, and then you just kind of fill in the available spots how you see it. But
I'm so disappointed we didn't get to see Heston Kerstad complete a full season this year.
For sure.
It might be heresy around these parts to say this, but he was putting up numbers that could have been close to Andrew Benintendi type.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, Matt was talking about, you know, he thinks he was going to set the single season school home run record. Mm-hmm. You know, his RBI numbers were going to be monstrous. I mean, they already were. What, he had like 10, he had double digit RBIs like on the first weekend.
Yeah. Now it seems so long ago.
It does.
They would be playing, I think, the last series this week, or it'd be close to SEC tournament time. I don't know.
I mean, you're probably walking into one of your final SEC series, and then, you know, the SEC tournament always started
because they always
toward the end of the month.
Finals was the last weekend series, I think. I'm trying to remember, but yeah, they would be close, and it's just sad to think about that too. I don't want to talk about it. I just got over the basketball stuff and the fact that we didn't have an NCAA tournament, and now we're gonna bring this up. Jeez.
No, we're officially like 2 months removed from the last live sporting event. It's
March 11th.
It's pretty crazy.
March 11th was the day that the Razorbacks played their last baseball game, when Arkansas played their last basketball game.
Yep.
And then I think there was one game that happened. The Big East tournament started on the 12th.
Yeah, Mike Anderson, St. John's.
Yeah, and they didn't even finish the game.
No, they called it at half.
Hey, he was beating St. John's. That's what matters. I don't know if you can count that as a win or not, but he was beating St. John's before they called that game.
Probably some people in public relations that are calling it a win.
Hey. You got to do whatever you can do on PR. Eric Musselman spoke out earlier this week on a radio program. Was that Halftime?
Yep, Halftime with Phil Elson.
Halftime with Phil Elson. So shout out to Phil. That he said that he would be in favor of uniform rules across college basketball. And this is something that just hasn't made sense to me, really, since I was a little kid learning the game of basketball and going, all right, so they play four quarters and everything except for college? What, does that make sense?
Yeah, I don't know. It's almost like it's one of those things that we just kind of go with the flow of how the rules are.
Mm-hmm.
And then somebody brings it up and then we're like, oh yeah, it's stupid. Like, why does the WNBA, the NBA, the National Federation of High Schools, and women's college basketball all go by a four-quarter format? And I think like men's college basketball has got to be like the only part of basketball that doesn't play quarters.
Right.
Why? Like, these guys, the guys that are playing at every level of basketball, like from high school to, and the girls that are playing, you know, high school basketball, boys who are playing basketball in high school and then in college, and on the women's side in college, like, they all want to get to the pros. So, like, why are we not, like, the WNBA and the NBA obviously have the four quarters. Women's college basketball has four quarters. High school does too. Why does men's college basketball not? Like, it doesn't make any sense. And Mus, if you get him on the right, if you ask him the right question, he will take off and run with it. And that's exactly what he did. Because, I mean, anytime – these days, anytime an Arkansas head coach is on the radio or a podcast or anything like that, we're listening to it just to see if there's anything we can take from it. And my ears perked up when he got asked about, you know, rules changes and, you know, more uniform rules. And he got asked, I think, two questions, and he talked for like 6 or 7 minutes. And that's when you know he's super passionate about something.
Yeah, and then if you're in radio, the segment's over and you go, well, I asked two questions. I guess they were the right ones.
Right.
But I agree that in the uniform rules, if you're a fan of college basketball, here's why you should be in favor of uniform rules in the switch to quarters as well. Simple math. In college basketball at the men's Division I level, timeouts. TV timeouts are under the 16, under 12, under 8, under 4. That's four TV timeouts and a half. And then they have what's called the floater as well that will get thrown in there. So if you ever wonder, you're like, we just took a timeout. It's not the under four. Why are we taking another one? That's called the floater. And they'll put that in most of the time in the second half. They just have to have, they have an extra break, basically.
I'm learning something new every podcast.
There you go. Trying to. Last time it was about the juvenile detention center.
Yep.
So they'll throw that in there. Now do the simple math with me. If you go to quarters, if they do it the same as they do the women's game, which I assume they would, you take a TV timeout after 5 minutes into quarter. 5 minutes into quarter.
So you got one less break per half.
One less break per half, which means the flow of the game, which if you've watched SEC college basketball, especially last year, you'll know that it was atrocious.
Yeah, there really was no flow to games.
Between the fouls called, between the TV timeouts, I think that that'll help a little bit. So that's one less pause in the action. Now, the TV timeouts may be longer. I don't know.
I think there's still 245, 230, 245. Because so, I know when I go back and watch games, I watch on YouTube TV, and they've got the fast forward 15 seconds thing. And so I just hit it 10 times.
Uh-huh.
I hit the fast forward 15 seconds 10 times, and it gets me through.
There you go.
Gets me through the commercial break.
I learned something new. It is 245 because most of the time they come back with 15 seconds of pad and then...
Yeah, just to kind of reset the game.
Yeah, 3 minutes. So it's about a 3 minute halftime period. Okay, that makes sense.
So, it's something else that, you know, if men's basketball went to four quarters and they also adopted the rules for fouls, like the fouls would reset after each quarter, like team fouls would reset after each quarter.
Really help Ethan Anderson.
You don't think, right? It would help a lot of guys. But I think you would be shooting less free throws. Because I think you don't start shooting free throws unless it's a shooting foul until the fifth foul in a quarter, I believe. And I think it's just two shots after that, if I'm not mistaken. So, I mean, I'm with Mus. I think it's nonsense that there's not, the rules aren't uniform across basketball.
And then another rule that he was harping on, you can change to the quarters and then under a minute left to go, you call a timeout.
Yeah, this was a big one with him.
Call a timeout after a mid-basket and you can advance the ball.
Yeah. I mean, if you just, like, if, say, Auburn is shooting free throws with, like, 45 seconds, or, no, I guess you could say 45 seconds. Auburn misses a free throw, Arkansas rebounds, immediately calls a timeout. Like, as long as they don't put the ball on the floor, you can call timeout.
Okay. So it's not just after a mid-basket.
Right. So... you grab a missed rebound because you see it all the time in the NBA. Mm-hmm. Like as long as you don't take that dribble, you have the option to advance the ball to the front court at the 28-foot marker on the side of the floor that the scores table is on. And Mus doesn't understand why that's not an option. He said, the advancement of the ball in late game situations only makes the game better, which I totally agree with that. It gives the offense a better chance to score. The defense now has to guard closer to the rim, and there's more strategy than inbounding the ball with 4 seconds to go and having to go the length of the floor. At that point, it turns into luck as opposed to being able to get your team in a huddle, diagram something with two or three different options, and with 4 seconds to go on a side out, you can have two or three different options. Like,
yeah,
it makes too much sense.
Listen, but nobody's accused the NCAA of making sense.
Like, that rule was instituted on the women's side in college in 2015, from what I could find.
So why?
2015. And 5 years later, the men's game still hasn't caught up to it.
I think that's a time. That time is coming. Change.
I hope so, because that would definitely make... Just think about it back when Arkansas played Auburn in Bud Walton Arena this year.
Right.
Like toward the end of regulation, Arkansas's got the ball with like 5 or 6 seconds left and they have to inbound on the baseline.
Right.
And then it's just Mason Jones dribbling up the floor and then he finds Jalen Harris. Could you imagine what Clay Moser, Chris Crutchfield, Mus, and Corey Williams could, and maybe, I mean, you throw in Anthony Ruta, Hayes Myers, any of those guys could
draw.
Yeah. Those guys have plenty of experience drawing up plays from the 28-foot marker, the side of the floor, or along the sideline, those guys could come up with something unique, surely.
You don't get the Derek Fisher 0.7 seconds lob into the goal against the Spurs back in 04, 03.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I remember going nuts after Derek Fisher hit that shot. I was a big Lakers fan then.
You don't get that if you don't have the advancement of the ball.
Right.
You were a big Lakers fan then. You're not now?
Not really.
Okay.
Not really. More of a – for some. After the Lakers, I was kind of a Lakers fan and a Steve Nash fan, like the 7 seconds or less Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. I loved those teams. And so when those two teams played, whenever they played, I was like torn. But, yeah, probably I'm still, for whatever reason, a Suns fan, even though they're hot garbage now, except for Devin Booker.
Devin Booker, that's something.
DeAndre Ayton, if he ever plays again.
That is true. They've had a lot of high draft picks recently because, as you said, they've been hot garbage.
Right.
Okay, uniform changes in rules. Just a quick recap. Musselman is in favor of the quarters and in favor of advancing the ball under 1 minute in the fourth. Is it the end of the second quarter too?
No, it's just the final minute
of the game.
Of regulation or overtime periods.
Okay. Final minute of regulation or the overtime periods. Okay. Talking about changes, the NCAA did change their NET rankings, which, if you're unfamiliar, NET rankings took the place of RPI last year, the year before.
Yeah, I think it's been around for a couple of years now.
And yes, they are slightly confusing, but they're trying to make it less confusing by taking out multiple facets of the equation that makes the NET rankings.
Yeah, so according to an NCAA.com release, the net is not – so starting with this upcoming season, the net will not take into account winning percentage, adjusted winning percentage, or scoring margin next year, so you can beat the hell out of anybody by 50 points. And like, that's not really going to matter a lot. They'll probably cap it. But the two components that remain in the net are this thing called team value index and also an adjusted net efficiency rating. So the team value index, according to that release, is a result-based feature rewarding teams for beating quality opponents, particularly away from home. And then the adjusted efficiency is a team's net efficiency, and it adjusts for strength of opponent and location for all games. So the net is going from like a five prong deal to just two, to, you know, simplify it just a little bit. So I think it's consistent with the women's basketball net, which was announced I think last week too. So that's uniform.
Because women's basketball used the RPI until this year, which is another thing that I just don't understand why the NCAA would institute it in one thing and then not the other. I guess they're just trying to test the waters out with it. And then if it doesn't really work, then they're going to move on. I don't know. That just doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but whatever.
It's good that they're uniform in that, at least.
Now.
In the net, yeah. The way that you select teams for postseason tournaments.
Do you know, in your analysis of the net, you can help us common folk out over here. Do you know if this would have helped or hurt Arkansas this year?
I do not know that. I don't know. Maybe I should have asked Mus earlier this week.
That's just something that I was curious about.
I think Arkansas's
about.
Net was like in the 40s.
They had a decent net because they kept winning in the non-con.
Yeah, had some pretty solid wins in the non-conference.
And I
couple
don't
of rogue wins.
Did they necessarily blow anybody out, which would have helped their NET ranking that, you know, now is not a factor? I don't remember.
Not that I can think of, really.
So, I mean, I guess they probably would have been about the same.
Maybe so.
Interesting.
That's thanks, over my head.
Thanks for following down that rabbit hole here on the Basketball Podcast in Mid-America. We brought up something last week as we move on now from the changes to the NET rankings. We have some more news. If you're a subscriber to WholeHogSports.com, you saw this story that Scotty wrote, but the SEC Big 12 Challenge. We threw out some hypotheticals last week about Arkansas hypothetically playing Memphis, which we were kind of looking forward to. If Arkansas didn't make the Big 12 Challenge because they take the top 10 teams, from the SEC. But we did get confirmation that Arkansas will be in the Big 12 Challenge next year.
Yeah, they're scheduled to be. Matt reached out to, because I think last week on a Zoom call that we had with Mus, he said that he wasn't sure one way or the other whether Arkansas was going to be in the Big 12 SEC Challenge this upcoming season. And so Matt reached out to an SEC spokesperson, and the spokesperson said that Arkansas is scheduled to play in the Challenge this year, which is pretty exciting too. And last season was the first year in a two-year cycle. That's kind of how they dictate who's going to be in this event. And so Arkansas has played in the Challenge 6 out of the 7 years that it has existed, including each of the last 6 years. And since Arkansas hosted TCU in Bud Walton Arena last year, the thinking is that Arkansas is going to play on the road next season. So me and Matt got to thinking, well, who were the Big 12 teams that played on the road last year? Those would be Iowa State, Oklahoma State, TCU, obviously, because Arkansas played them last year in Bud, Kansas State, and Baylor. So there's some pretty intriguing potential opponents for that. I think a couple of those games, two or three of those games could be really fun, including Baylor.
Yeah, so we were trying to figure it out a little bit about who Arkansas might play. And so Arkansas, if it goes by those metrics, Arkansas has to play one of those teams, right? This is assuming, but Arkansas has to play one of those teams. And you think about it, well, Kentucky has to play at home, right?
Yeah, because they were at Texas Tech last year.
And so you have to think, well, maybe they'll return the game and Texas Tech will go to Rupp. Or maybe Kansas will go to Rupp, because Kansas has to play on the road as well.
Right. Yeah, because they hosted Tennessee.
So you...
right after the brawl, I think, with Kansas State.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was that game.
So you're not going to get Texas Tech or Kansas, which is kind of the sad part. So then you kind of also try to match up which SEC teams are going on the road to match up, because Baylor is one of the better teams out of that option that we gave you with Iowa State, Oklahoma State, TCU, Kansas State, and Baylor.
Baylor was a top-ranked team in the country last year during the event, and they went to Florida.
And they went to Florida.
Spanked them, too.
So Florida could return that game if they wanted to do that. It's just kind of matching puzzle pieces almost. And you also have to realize the SEC and the Big 12 are going to want the best games.
Sure.
So you got to realize where you rank in terms of best games. And now Arkansas is going to bring in a stellar roster next year, but there's a lot of question marks around that. They don't necessarily know. I wouldn't be surprised if Arkansas returned to the game to TCU, or they ended up, I think you said Kansas State would seem pretty likely. I would also like to see them go to Iowa State to try and avenge a loss that they had in what I believe is one of the very first.
Yeah, that was in 2014-15.
It was not a very good game.
It was not. Early season game, Arkansas got hit in the nose pretty early. They were down and out.
Back when the SEC Big 12 Challenge wasn't in the middle of the year.
Right. Yeah, I think that game was back in November. Let me check that real quick. Yeah, that game was December 4th. So, yeah, so that was really early, or about midway through the non-conference. I remember that night I was watching it, because at the time Arkansas went into that game ranked higher than Iowa State did. I think Arkansas was number 18 in the country, and Iowa State was, I think, number 20. And I liked several of the guys that played on that Iowa State team. I think Monty Morris was on that team, and maybe DeAndre Kane. DeAndre Kane and Monty Morris were a problem. And team could have had George Niang on it. Do you remember him? He kind of had the old man game. He would, like, the old guy at the Y who would, you know, not quick. Not fast.
Just get it in the
low
post.
Not real athletic, but shoot. Yeah, he could give you a bucket. He was really fun. Arkansas went and played in that game, and you know, just think they lost 95-77. And I think Hilton Coliseum would be a really cool place to cover a game. It'd be awesome. I mean, you hear a lot about the Hilton Magic.
Right.
They don't lose in that building very often if Iowa State's any good. But I remember that night, me and my buddy were living in an apartment close to campus. And I waited until after that game was over to start writing a 15-page paper that I had to do the next day. So That game was very memorable for me.
What did you make on the paper?
I was okay. Did well enough.
That's a cop-out answer right there. I was okay. I did well enough. That's all you need to know.
I probably got a B or a C on it. You know, a 15-page paper, you just feel like you're repeating yourself over and over at a certain point.
But if the pattern holds up, then Arkansas will play in the SEC Big 12 Challenge next year in the 2020-2021 season. But that does mean that since they finished 11th this year, that they will not play in the 21-22 SEC Big 12 Challenge if everything stays the same. So then maybe you can get your Memphis matchup. Depends if Penny Hardaway is ticked off the NCAA enough and is still the head coach in Memphis, whether or not you even want to play them by that point. But
well, of course you would.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You just always want to play Memphis, yeah. Regardless.
Yeah, bring the nostalgia back. But who would you want to see Arkansas play next season out of those teams that are potential opponents?
I'll rank them as Baylor 1, Iowa State 2, Kansas State 3, Oklahoma State 4, TCU 5. And TCU just because they played them. I don't really know the reason beside that, but sometimes I really don't like returning the game. Arkansas has done that a few times with Texas Tech. I think Tech came to Bud Walton and then they visited, and then they did that again with Oklahoma State.
Right.
So it's probably likely that they'll go to TCU and play Jamie Dixon's team. If I remember correctly, he wasn't very happy in the postgame press conference, was he?
No, of course not.
Yeah. So they could go over there and play them. That wouldn't be bad. They've also played Oklahoma State recently, and that was just an awful game.
Yeah, on the road. At Oklahoma State. Oh, man. Yeah, that was a rough one. For sure.
I remember watching at Idris Gallagher Arena?
Gallagher Iba. Yep.
Idris Alba, I think is how I got
it. Okay. I wouldn't mind. Like, obviously, I think Baylor is probably toward the top of that list.
Yeah.
I would probably put Iowa State probably number two, just like you would. I think a trip to Kansas State would be fun because I don't think, like, Kansas State had a rough year last year. I think they finished like 11-21 or something like that. Like, they had a pretty poor year.
Probably because they were too busy throwing punches instead of making baskets.
But probably so. But hey, they played to the final whistle. If you learned anything from that brawl, the Octagon of Doom is real.
Legitimately.
Yeah, it's real. I think going to Bramlage would be pretty fun. I would not be mad at all if they went back to Oklahoma State either. Like, that's a pretty unique venue. Like, the crowd is pretty intimate. It's like right on top of you.
Yeah.
I think that could be. I don't think Oklahoma State had the greatest year last season, but I mean, I think that could be a fun matchup. Again, it's regional. So Arkansas fans are going to travel. I think they'd travel to Kansas State too.
That's the thing.
They'd travel anywhere, really.
That's the thing about playing in this Big 12 Challenge is that most of the teams, like you said, are regional. You know, there's been the argument that Arkansas fits in the SEC or the Big 12 better than the SEC. We're not going to get into that, but if you just look at it from a geography standpoint, that, you know, it's decently close to get to. I mean, Dallas is just 5 hours. Which is, you know, if you tried really hard, you could make a day trip out of that.
Yeah.
That would be trying really hard.
Right.
But then you got the two Oklahoma schools that are about 3 hours away. Oklahoma State may be a little closer even. Then going up to Iowa and over to Kansas State. So those are regional. So I do think that Arkansas will travel. All right, moving on, Scotty. We got more to talk about. And really, what I want to stay and talk about this big series that you've been working on about before they were coaches. You mentioned it earlier. You've done Todd Schaefer, the assistant coach for the women's basketball team. You've done Mike Nabors, Arkansas's women's basketball coach. You've done Dave Van Horn, Matt Hobbs, the baseball coaches, and you have one coming out on Musselman soon.
Yeah, it was really fun. Like, I talked to this whole series has been really fun because, I mean, we talked about it last week. Like, we remember the first jobs that we had very well. And, you know, you still carry some of those things that you learned from those first jobs even now. And I talked to Mus on Monday for a series that Matt and I are doing next week on various coaches on campus, kind of getting some of the backstory on how they were hired. So I'm doing Eric Musselman and Mike Neighbors, and I think Matt is doing Dave Van Horn, Sam Pittman, and Lance Harder. So that's going to be a fun series. We got interviews with all of those coaches. I talked to Mus, and I talked to Danielle Musselman. She gave me some really cool, like, you know, sometimes like in those situations, like the coach in that situation is hyper focused on preparing for that job. And so the wife remembers some minute details that maybe the coach doesn't remember, just because, like I said, they're getting ready to take a new job. So Danielle gave me some really fascinating details. But I also in that interview asked him about the first couple of jobs that he had, and I'm not going to give away like the main one. You can read the story on the site for that.
Tease.
But he said, Mus said in college, he started a customer service or a customer complaint department with the San Diego Padres.
Oh boy.
And he said he had to be at every Padres home game. So any complaint, whether it was like parking complaint, and then he said if a firecracker went off in a toilet in one of the bathroom areas.
Apparently this happened.
Like if an usher was rude, all of those complaints would come to him, and then he would have to fill out the paperwork necessary to send them to different parts of the organization to make sure that those complaints got rectified. And
where did complaints about starting pitchers and batting averages and lineup changes go?
It's a good question. Probably letters to the editor at the newspaper.
Just send those right on. All right, just gonna get these out of the way.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. And you know, Mus eventually became the assistant player personnel director with the Clippers. Like that's part of the story I'm not gonna dive all the way into. But he had a job with the San Diego Clippers. It was before they moved to Los Angeles. So it was the San Diego Clippers. He was a ball boy for the Clippers, and he still remembers, like, he would work the opposing team's locker room. So he still remembers like the guys that would tip him. He still remembers the guys who were rude. And he also remembers the coaches who would give, you know, really good motivational speeches, because he was hanging around the opposing team's locker room. And he said a lot of the ball boys at the time wanted to be around the Clippers locker room, because, you know, you're growing up in that area, you kind of idolize the hometown team's players. But Mus wanted a little bit of diversity. And, you know, anytime you get all kinds of opposing teams coming in. Right. And so he would learn something new just about any time a team came to town. So that, I thought that was pretty interesting.
That would be pretty unique, because you play half of 82 is 41. So if you play 41 home games, you get 41 different coaches. Now, you know, some will repeat and whatnot, but you get that unique perspective from different people about how they motivate people. Also, something I never thought of was tipping a ball boy. I don't know why, but yeah. I never thought the ball boys needed to be tipped, I guess.
Me neither.
I'm never going to be in that situation to be able to tip a ball boy, but yeah, I get that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah, it was really cool. Like, and I didn't even tell the what I thought was the most unique story. So,
which is why
you're going to have to read the story for that one. It was, I think you'll find it as interesting as I did.
Worth the subscription to Whole Hog Sports to read Scotty's story on before they were coaches. Also check out his Dave Van Horn one. It's pretty good.
Yeah, the Dave Van Horn one was really good. I guess I'll go ahead and tell a little bit of it. So like he grew up south of Kansas City, and he worked like from the age of 13 to 15, he worked at the Kansas City 3-2 baseball complex. For about 2 months straight, he would show up to that complex at 7 a.m. and he would line the fields, drag the dirt. You know, at that time, like all of the infields, like the entire infield was pretty much dirt. So he had to like water it, drag it. He was like hosing off concrete, just doing everything he could to make the fields as pretty as possible for when games happened that night. And, you know, you're 13 to 15 years old, like you don't have transportation, like you don't have your own car
right.
to get to the complex.
Can't drive.
Right. So the problem was for Dave, he lived like 7 or 8 miles away from the complex. And so he had to get pretty creative in the way that he got there. And he said, he told Matt, he said, some days I would hitchhike. And he said, some days I would walk. And then when I think the summer that he turned 15, he would start driving to the complex, whether it was on a motorcycle or a car. And he didn't have a driver's license. So I mean, it's pretty unique.
I feel like you should be able to get a bike. 7 or 8 miles on a bike seems a lot more doable than 7 or 8 miles walking. I don't
right.
know about what it is, but, and then you got to go back. You got to go back home.
Yeah. And then some days, you know, he not only worked out there, he played out there too.
Right.
And so some days he'd work all day in the Missouri heat. And then he would go back home, shower, get ready for a game that night, and then do it all over again. So there were lots of days like that. So that was pretty unique. And like I said earlier, like some of the things that you pick up from those jobs, like dragging the field, just some, you know, like if I think there, a couple of years ago, someone made a big deal about Dave grabbing a broom and like sweeping off the top steps of a dugout or something like that. Mm-hmm. And Dave's just like, that's not phony with me. Like that's real. Like if you see something that needs to be done and there's nobody around to do it, like do it yourself. And he tells his own players that like there's something on the field that needs to be done and something's not exactly, you know, how they want it. And there's nobody around, you go do it yourself. And then at that point, people figure out, you know, this is how things are done. And it, you know, I think it elevates, you know, everybody around you, kind of instill that work ethic.
For sure. For sure. For sure.
So I wanted to ask you about, you've got a Connor Vanover story.
Yes.
Coming pretty soon. I'm about halfway through editing it. What was the most interesting thing that you found out about Connor from the interviews?
Well, I got a unique perspective on Connor.
Right. You know him.
I know him. I was in ninth grade when Connor's brother, who's the same age as me, comes in and transfers at semester. So he comes in, you know, probably January 10th or something, and starts practicing with our basketball team. He can't play because in Arkansas high school basketball rules, if you transfer from a public school to a private school, you have to sit out a year. So he can't play. And he's going to take a year back anyway. He's going to get held back. As Busman would call it, he's going to take a development year.
Right.
And so he ends up not even playing with us, but he's at practice and he's practicing with us. And Connor's brother, Brandon, is just as tall, just a little bit shorter. But at this point, he's just as tall as Connor because Connor's in what would be the sixth grade. He's about to go into seventh. And Brandon's 7 foot. We're in eighth grade. He's running around.
That's,
you know,
insane.
Yes. Yes, by far. And there's this ball that gets loose. So we had to practice sometimes with the girls team. So we would divide up the courts and half of the court would be the girls team and half of the court would be the guys team. And this ball got loose from somewhere. I don't know where. Dude didn't see it. And if you've ever seen a 7 foot kid fall, it is a scary proposition. Brandon tripped over this ball and fell just straight to the ground. And I'm like, I think he hit his head. And we're like, oh, dude's dead.
Yeah, it was like a skyscraper falling.
Like, you know, you hit terminal velocity. People talk about that if you fall from a high distance. I was like, that dude might have hit terminal velocity on the way down. Right. He's so high. And he's like, I'm out for the practice. But he ended up being fine. But so he gets held back. But since Brandon comes over, Connor comes over to the school as well. In Connor's first year, he had a June birthday. And since he was going to have to sit out a year anyway because he transferred like Brandon did from a public school to a private school, he decided to take a year, a development year as well. So he had a June birthday, so he was the youngest in his grade. And then he gets held back, so now that he's the oldest. So he finished and was doing seventh grade over again, I believe is the correct way to say that. And so as he's doing seventh grade over again, I'm now in 10th grade and he starts practicing. The high school basketball coach at that time was Jeff Hogue. And he says, all right, Connor, you're going to start practicing with us. And Connor kind of wanted to, because he's like, I'm not going to get any better practicing at seventh graders. Like,
right.
I'm sorry, but they're 5'6".
Right.
You know?
Yeah. You gotta play up.
I'm 7 foot here. I'm just still on the post all day long to shoot layups and score 56 points in a
right.
game. So he starts playing up, and it was kind of crazy because the first day that he comes out there, we're practicing, and I didn't play football, so I've been doing off-season basketball, and just a few days in, and you know, he's starting to shoot, and you can just tell the dude is pure from the three-point line, just stroking him. And I'm like, I can't shoot like that. Are you joking? And then trying to post him up, and I'm like, this is just ridiculous. And he only weighs about 170, and he's 7 foot. But I'm just going, this is stupid. And yeah, after about 2 weeks, I realized that the seventh grader was better than me, the 10th grader at basketball. I was like, well, this is just a fact that I'm going to have to accept.
It's probably a realization for a lot of those guys,
right,
on the team.
It kind of stunk. I was like, this is a realization that I'm just going to have to accept. But the guys are, in all honesty, were really welcoming. You know, when you have all the way from seniors in high school to accept a freshman into the locker room is kind of unique. And they did. We accepted him pretty well. I mean, he even said that. I was like, what, from your perspective, did it look like? And he said, it was awesome. But then there's just certain times that you're going through the entire season with this guy. He's a part of the team. And then you sometimes forget that this 7-footer is still in seventh grade.
Right.
You know, this dude can't drive like you can to practice. This dude is, I don't know. He is trying to pass pre-algebra over here.
Yeah,
and
right.
It's just weird at times because sometimes his immaturity, and not in a bad way, would just come out and you're like, oh yeah, you are 13, 14 years
right.
old. And, but that would pop out. But it was really unique to get to know him through basketball. He ended up right as his freshman year is starting. He transferred over because he was working with our high school basketball coach. He was a big man. And then our basketball coach's brother played for the Razorbacks. I can't remember his name, but his last name's Hogue. And Michael Hogue. And so he had some big work. So they've been working with him since about sixth grade. So he comes over to play for him as his ninth grade year, his eighth grade year is ending and he's going to go into his ninth grade year. They fire Hogue at Arkansas Baptist and hire an alumni and former Bentonville assistant coach, who is now the head coach at Central, in Brian Ross.
Oh,
Ross,
yeah.
Ross had just gotten done coaching Malik Monk. And so they hire him. He comes in, and it was really unique that, you know, he starts working with Connor right away, and Connor's like, I think that really held some weight. There's some fun stories in the story that I'm not going to spoil for you, including Connor's very first game that he played against. He played against a Razorback,
mm-hmm.
I guess now as a former Razorback. And then the team right after him that played was pretty unique as well. I'm trying to think if there's anything that I left out. You know, he went from Arkansas Baptist to Findlay Prep. I just thought it was so crazy, the people that he was playing against at Findlay Prep. Reggie Chaney was on that team.
Right.
Ethan Minsa, which is a San Diego State guard. No, not guard. Forward. And then Bol Bol.
Oh, yeah.
The Denver Nuggets. Is that how you say his name?
Yeah, Bol Bol.
Bol mm-hmm. Bol. The Denver Nuggets center. Connor went up against him every single day in practice.
Yeah, that's insane.
I thought those just stand out. Those are a few things. There's a lot more in the story to get to, so make sure to find that story about Connor Vanover. But it's a really unique to get to have known him and get to tell his story.
Oh, for sure. So did he talk at all about his development year at Arkansas? What he went through then?
Yeah, he talked about just getting better with the scrimmages, with playing and lifting. You know, we've talked multiple times on this podcast about the scrimmages after practice and what they looked like. And Connor said it was always me, JD, and Bebe versus Ethan Henderson, Ty Stevens, and...
Is it Jamario Bell, maybe?
Jamario Bell when he came, and then Emeka.
Okay.
Abukwelu as well. And he said that did help and motivated them because they weren't getting game reps. They didn't get the reps because during the season... You hear about Musselman and his preparation, and again, this is another one of those things of Musselman had the preparation for the team, and so they didn't want to take reps away from them, so they're not practicing
right
during the season on game prep and stuff. They're on the sideline working on individual skills and drills, shooting, whatever it is. And that was unique. Oh, in his recruitment, when he was getting recruited again, man, Connor said that he was just blown away by, he never met Aaron Musselman before in person.
Are you talking about after he decided to transfer from Cal?
Yes. Sorry. He had never met Aaron Musselman in person before. But then whenever he gets to Arkansas, just the amount of information that the entire staff had on him, he's like, this is wild. The preparation here is incredible. And he goes, I'm doing it now. So they went to the baseball game afterwards. They're in the parking lot, and he goes, yeah, I think I want to recruit now, or commit right now, come to you so that we can play next year. And he said,
awesome. Well, he committed in a parking lot after a baseball game?
Yes. I tried to get him to remember which one it was. He couldn't remember which one it was, but it was.
Well, I know he committed to Arkansas on May 15th last year, so we may have to cycle back and go look at Arkansas's baseball schedule from last year. Those are the types of stories that I really like, because – I mean, people could say that, yeah, I committed, but they don't give like the backstory, like where they were, who they were with.
They had walked out of the parking lot. He said it in about the seventh inning or so, and his family was all around him and they're saying bye. And he said, this is what I want to do. He had chosen between Maryland, Vanderbilt, and Arkansas. And he said that Maryland had just signed or gotten a transfer that was a big man, so he didn't want to go play there. And then between Vanderbilt and Arkansas, he liked Vanderbilt, and they had just hired an assistant coach that was with them at California. And so it looked like he might go there, but then just the preparation for Musselman and the fact that his system fits with Connor.
For sure. I'm trying to pull up. I've got a spreadsheet with notable Arkansas sports dates, and it says, yeah, Connor committed – on May 15th, 2019, so Arkansas, the weekend before, had played LSU at Baum Walker. So
could
that,
have been it.
Yeah, that could have been that weekend. That's really neat.
I remember during the Super Regional against Ole Miss that Eric Musselman was dressed up in the Arkansas baseball attire.
Yep.
And he had the team there to support them, and I see Connor walking through the concourse, and you could just
tell. You can't miss him.
You could just tell. I'm like, hey, that's Connor. You can see him from a mile away. Dude's 7'3". And another thing that I found interesting, I didn't really get to put a whole lot of this in the story, I mentioned it, but his former, not his former high school coach, but Hogue, the coach that he's worked with a ton. And I mean, if you know Hogue, and he was my former basketball coach, so I still follow him on social media and stuff. Mm-hmm. They're getting together right now during the pandemic and getting shots up at a local church. And so he's just working on, reminding Connor of some of the fundamentals that they've worked on.
His jumper is going to be blessed.
Hopefully, you know, the good Lord and coming down and blessing his jumper. But they're working on at a church gym some of his fundamental stuff. But, you know, he said, Connor, when he added weight, which he's up to like 240-ish right now, which from 170 to 240. Also, you got to read it in the story how he gained weight.
Man, it's a huge difference.
Yes. You got to read in the story how he gained weight. It's hilarious. But when he gets up to 240, Hogue says if he can add 10 to 20 more pounds, he'll be a man. He said when he gets that on his man body, he'll be a presence. He said now, even right now, you can't really move him out of the post. He said a lot of people, when he was back in high school, when he was a little scrawnier, those smaller guys would just try and get kind of at his knees, kind of at his waist, just push him
out. Defend him from underneath.
Yeah, push him out of the post. But he said now that doesn't really happen, and he's really good. Now, he's not going to fit in the low post game necessarily in Arkansas's system because he's going to hit the trail three, the pick and pop three. He said, but he can finish with both hands. He has been taught and can execute almost every single low post move that he can think, that Hogue can think of to teach him. He said, and his footwork is pretty great for a guy that is that big. He said, so whenever he gets in the low post, yeah, he's going to be a 3-point shooter, and that's what they're going to utilize him as. But he can hold his own down there, which is an improvement that I've seen from watching him in high school and playing against him in high school too, right now.
Right. Yeah. Good feet, soft touch. That's a pretty good combination for a big guy. I'm excited about him.
No doubt about it.
Guys up and down the roster, I'm just pumped to see play.
Can November come already? I mean, geez.
I know. Tell me about it.
Unless when November comes, let's pray and hope that there is basketball to be played. All right. Well, that'll wrap it up here. Oh, before we go anywhere, we realize that we have not given you the trivia that we have promised so many weeks ago. But if this was a government organization, we would tell you that there's just some tape, some bureaucratic tape being placed around us releasing that.
And working on it.
We're working through it. And, you know, it's never, nothing's ever easy, but if it was easy, then it wouldn't be worth the wait. So we're teasing it again. And we realize that we haven't given it to you yet, but we hope to give it to you soon. All right, Scotty. I think that's it. You got anything else?
I'm good.
All right. Well, for Scotty Bordelon and the entire Whole Hog Sports crew, I am Seth Campbell saying so long. We'll see you back here next week.